In this episode of Fictional Hangover, we talk about brothers who are dicks, the movie adaptation, and selling your petticoats, Ducky, in our discussion of The Case of the Missing Marquis by Nancy Springer, audiobook narrated by Katherine Kilgren.
Ducky.
Hi, Ducky.
Everybody, welcome to Fictional Hangover, a podcast about young adult and new adult books, series, authors, and voice actors that is full of spoilers. I'm Amanda.
And I'm Claire, and today we're going to discuss The Case of the Missing Marquis by Nancy Springer, audiobook narrated by Katherine Kilgren.
Standard disclaimer, if you haven't read this book, please remember that Fictional Hangover is all about spoilers. If you haven't read or listened or watched the movie, kind of, and don't want to be spoiled, stop listening to us and go read or listen to the book. Then come back. If you haven't done this but want to pretend that you have, or if you don't care about spoilers, or if you just like the show so much that you don't care about any of that, then listen up. Movie!
Ooh. Have you seen it?
I have. I have seen the movie. However, we are going to watch it with listeners in a couple of days, right? Which day is it? I don't remember, but it's happening. Check the Facebook page. Check Facebook, and that will tell you when we are watching this movie together.
There will be an event. Say you're going, and then go.
And then go. Download the Google Chrome extension Teleparty and join us.
Yes, because it will be a good... The last
yes,
one was.
It will. Good lord.
It is the book club, so you must be a member of the book club.
That's true, but that only takes one click.
It does. It does. And then, while you're there, join in the conversation.
Yeah, please do.
Or the book club meetings that we're having.
Or the book club meetings that we're having, which is also fun.
Yes, the next one we're looking to book between Christmas and New Year. Again, there will be a poll going up to see when more people can be available for it.
Yes. So make sure you're answering all of those polls, exercising your right to vote.
There's another way people can vote as well.
How's that?
On the Would You Rather group.
Oh, yes. Join the Would You Rather group as well. That also requires one click of joining the group. But do it!
There is another way people can, you know, share their feelings about stuff.
What? You have so many things that you just keep making up.
I'm not making any of this up. This is all
Send us an
stuff.
Email.
I was going to say.
Join our Patreon.
They were going to join our Patreon.
Send us a message on our website. So many different ways.
We have a huge community contact area. So use it. Use it.
Speaking of Patreon, I would like to give a shout out to our newest Patreon member, our newest patron, if you will, Coral. Thank you for joining our Patreon, Coral.
Yay, Coral!
We appreciate you. Look forward to your social media shout out. It'll be delightful. It'll be delightful.
It will, but all I can say is they do it to themselves.
They do.
This is technically self-inflicted. Yeah.
Yes. Coral has joined our Would You Rather tier, which means that she will get to join us on the show sometime to play a game of Would You Rather. So that will be very exciting.
Yes.
She gets to choose her book that we're discussing on the show. We'll probably have to tell her some of the books we have coming up so she can
We'll let her know what the plans are, because we have recently, very, very recently, finalized the book club challenge themes.
Yes, we have.
And scheduled in some books, new releases that we're very, very, very excited
yes,
to
indeed.
Read.
Yes, indeed.
It's going to be a good year.
It is. It's going to be a fantastic year. We've got some fantastic guests lined up.
Yes.
Already.
Jinx.
It's very exciting. Very, very exciting. Okay.
Do you know what else we've got coming up, by the way?
What?
On December 22nd.
Our live episode. Oh, it's so exciting.
Yikes.
Yikes.
Ho,
Yikes.
Ho, ho.
Tis the season for another live.
Yeah.
Yeah, everybody check that out. December 22nd. That's a Tuesday at noon Pacific. 8 GMT.
And the many, many others in between. I'm still not sure what half of them are real.
Hopefully you'll be able to join us for the live. And if not, you'll get to watch it after the fact and also listen to the episode, because of course the episode will still come out as scheduled. You will always have your Wednesday episodes to look forward to.
And it's going to be a bit festive. Spooky, but festive.
It is. I'm excited about it.
Yeah.
So hopefully people will join us for that too. Facebook Live.
Yes. Join us on our Facebook page. On the Facebook page. I'm going.
I am also going.
Goodness.
I know. I know. It hasn't been up for very long, and I think we already have people going, so.
That's exciting.
That's something.
This is nervous laughing. The hysteria will kick in very soon.
We had plenty of people watch us live last time. It was fun. Nothing terrible happened except for my computer shutting down in the beginning of it.
That was funny though. Everybody got to say me nope out.
That won't happen this time though. I believe I have fixed that problem.
Excellent.
No crashing this time. It'll be great.
Right, we've had 16 hours of various announcements, plugs, adverts, etc., etc.
Yeah, we have. I think we should finally get into this.
Let's dive into it. It is a very short book.
It's a short book. It's a very short book. The audiobook was all of 4 hours long, which yeah. If you listen the way Claire and I listen, it took you about 2 hours to listen.
I've listened to it twice.
Yep. I've listened to it. I've read it. I've watched the movie.
Yep.
Yes. All of those things.
Well prepared. And it's all less than 6 hours now. All of that took less than 6 hours.
Yes, it did. Anyway, so I found some background information that I thought was very interesting. Mm-hmm. As I always do, I read several articles before we have our episodes. And these were kind of about like how Nancy Springer feels about the Netflix version of her book, because it just came out recently, just a couple months ago. Mm-hmm. But that's not really the question that I have pulled.
Okay.
The question that she answered that I found is about where the idea for her story came from. And it's not very exciting. She says it came from her editor. Yeah. She's written several other things about like younger siblings or children of famous people doing things. So her editor wanted her to write something set during Jack the Ripper times.
Okay.
Okay. And so she thought, well, what happened during Jack the Ripper times? Oh, Sherlock Holmes. And so following her plan that she had done for other things, she thought, well, I can't exactly give Holmes a child. In one article, she said, I think he's still a virgin. So how about a much younger sister? And then in another article, she said, could I give Sherlock Holmes a daughter as I had Robin Hood? No, absolutely not. Holmes is such a thoroughgoing bachelor. So I envisioned a sister for him. And somehow I knew at once that her name would be Enola. So he's either a rambling bachelor or a virgin.
Or option 3, Dr. Watson.
Mm-hmm. Or he could just be asexual.
Or he could just be asexual.
All of the above are totally fine.
I always imagine, I mean, I've not read Sherlock Holmes. My mum has. My mum's read the Sherlock Holmes.
I've not read Sherlock Holmes either.
No. And I was going to ask my mum before recording, but I forgot what day of the week anything is this at the moment.
Right.
But I always imagined, like, all of the adaptations I've seen of Sherlock, he is very asexual. Mm-hmm. You know, he's got a lot of problems as yes. well, that his sexual preferences, if any, don't really factor into it. But
he's quite struck by melancholia.
Yes. I mean, I do know within the Sherlock Holmes books that Arthur Conan Doyle, you know, he didn't, it's not like he had the backstory of Sherlock written down. He didn't have the family tree written down. It was, if it was convenient, something was added in.
Hmm.
It's not, it's it's quite dissimilar, I think, in the way that potentially dissimilar to the way that a modern author would go, where the character's a bit more developed and they know they've got X amount of siblings if it's needed and
yeah,
that kind of thing.
Well, now he's got a younger sister.
Good.
Because he can't have children, apparently. Maybe also that, he just can't. He can't have children.
I don't think Sherlock Holmes should have children. Not with his drug problem.
I don't think Sherlock Holmes should have children either. Let's make our own Sherlock Holmes story.
Okay.
Okay.
Done.
Awesome.
So we really need to start the subreddit, you know.
We really do. We really, really do. But we're not. Not right now. We're still talking about this book right now.
Far too busy.
Yes. So what were your initial thoughts on this book?
I enjoyed the movie. I saw the movie the weekend it was released on Netflix.
Mm-hmm.
I had no idea of that it existed. Like, Enola Holmes existed. Mm-hmm. Because it's not really over here. Like, I know my mother-in-law wanted to read the Enola Holmes books after watching the movie, and she mm-hmm. couldn't get hold of them, like, even on Kindle at the time. I mean, it's been re-released since,
mm-hmm.
but it wasn't really big over in the UK. But then after I watched the movie, I was like, oh, I wouldn't mind reading the book now and seeing how similar it is.
Mm-hmm.
I enjoyed the movie. I enjoyed the book. The book adaptation, if the movie adaptation was direct from the book, the movie wouldn't be as good, though.
Right. That was something else that came up in the articles that I was reading, that Nancy Springer said also that she didn't watch the movie ahead of time. She just watched it on Netflix when it came out, along with all of the rest of us. But
she must have been at least told about some of the changes that were taking place.
Yeah, she had to have been. But she said that she liked the changes that were made, and making those changes from books to movies is what creates legends. And I really, really enjoyed that train of thought.
Yeah.
Because everyone will be talking about the movie, and then the people who have read the book will go, oh, but then this happened in the book. And then, you know, you get excited and you go and read the book.
Yeah.
I like it.
I do too.
I like it. And they were good changes. Good, yeah. and necessary changes.
Did you hear about the uproar/current lawsuit from the Holmes, the Arthur Conan Doyle estate?
No.
Against the movie?
No.
They don't like the fact that Sherlock is painted emotional. He's portrayed
emotional. Oh, he had one emotion. He had one emotion.
And even then, I think it was only like 0.75% of an emotion. It was like the tiniest of smirks.
Yeah.
Apparently the Conan Doyle estate is not happy with the way they've portrayed Sherlock. But then I would turn around and say, you've seen the Robert Downey Jr. portrayal of Sherlock. You've seen the Benedict Cumberbatch portrayal of Sherlock. They're emotional.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, they are.
The vast spectrum of emotion mm-hmm. is a hit throughout. So I'm sorry. Henry Cavill's portrayal of Sherlock was very straight-laced. Mm-hmm. It was tiny little smirks.
Yes. One half of one emotion.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think they should just get over it.
I mean, yeah, I agree. What's your point of view on characters? Because I've always been of the belief that, you know, once something's published, yes, the author owns the intellectual property rights. They are the characters. But if somebody wants to write fanfic, or if somebody wants to take those characters and continue their story.
Cosplay them. Cosplay. What?
Or, you know, put them into a cosplay. Then it's fine. And if anything, as long as you're not disrespecting the original source or the author or the characters, I personally don't see anything too wrong with that.
I think I would be pleased if something that I had written became something else in someone else's mind.
Yeah, I think about the cosplay that you post on social media, the amount of times you've posted a cosplay and an author's never had a cosplay from their books before, and they're like, absolutely buzzing over that.
It makes me really happy.
Gil Carriger's like, nobody's ever done certain characters And she would really like to see them. So it's like, well, mm-hmm. you know, challenge accepted.
Yeah. Yeah. I like it. I like when authors are pleased to see their living works walking around and, you know, breathing and taking photographs of themselves.
Yeah.
I like that.
So do I.
Okay. Let's begin.
Yes.
Or shall I say, before the book begins, a stranger in a black veil searches the slums of London for a missing loved one. The searcher is alone, always alone, but is being followed and must stay far enough ahead of them to not get caught. She sees a man in a top hat approach a prostitute. She does not belong on these streets, but she has no home. If she can make it through the night, maybe she'll find her missing loved one.
Ooh.
Ooh. Ooh.
Who is this stranger?
I wonder!
On Enola's 14th birthday, her mother leaves before she wakes, but her mother is always leaving her alone. Her name is Alone, spelled backwards after all. Her mother likes to go out exploring, taking her notebooks and watercolours, so surely she'll be home eventually. Mrs. Lane, the cook, gives Enola her birthday gifts from her mother. A drawing kit, a book about the messages of flowers, fans, handkerchiefs, wax seals and stamps, and a handmade booklet of ciphers. She liked them all, except the ciphers. Enola's mother doesn't return that night, and she's still missing the next day, so Enola goes to look for her in her favourite places. But she is nowhere to be found. She thinks of how her mother is older, and how she was late in life baby. A scandal!
Oh, scandal! Catch my pearls! Ooh.
Who always caused her mother distress in some way. She could have fallen somewhere, or her heart could have given out. She could even be dead. No, 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 don't think that. No, 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 no. So she searches all day, but can't find her mother. Back at home that night, Enola gives in and writes telegrams to her brothers, Mycroft Holmes and Sherlock Holmes. We know those names from somewhere.
Gasp! The next day, Enola goes to send her telegrams and searches everywhere in town for her mother. She asks everyone at all the shops and all the places her mother might visit. Then she asks at all the shops and places her mother would never visit. But still, no one has seen her. Upon returning home, Enola thinks to look in her mother's rooms. She finds her watercolor kit, which is surprising because she always takes it with her when she goes out. She should have searched her mother's rooms first. She searches all around and finds her mother's bed unmade and several unmentionables.
Oh my goodness.
Not put away. Oh, gasp! Pearl clutch again! She finds an object she's never seen before and carries it with her to Mr. Lane, the butler. Embarrassed, he tells her the thing is worn to fill out a lady's dress under her bustle. This inspires Enola to ask Mr. Lane if he recalls what her mother wore when she left the house the day before. A very masculine jacket, hat, and walking umbrella, and a bustle. That is an odd outfit.
Enola receives word that her brothers will arrive by train the next day, so she takes a bath in preparation. She thinks a lot about her missing mother. No, no, stop that. She thinks about her brothers instead.
Stop thinking about your mother, Enola. You're alone.
Yeah.
Alone.
So they haven't visited in 10 years since their father died because they're embarrassed to be around Enola. Scandalous, baby. Scandalous.
Oh, scandal!
More pearl clutching!
This is thrice I have clutched my pearls!
Thrice, you say?
Thrice!
Smelling salts. So she thinks about how successful they are, especially Sherlock. She wonders if they'll even recognise her. I mean, come on. Last time I saw her, she was 4. Her brothers are handsome, Sherlock more than Mycroft, as Mycroft is a little paunchier, but she knows who they are immediately. They, however, think she is a scraggly street urchin and are puzzled as to why she didn't bring the coach to pick them up. Coach? Horses? They don't have those things. Sherlock hires someone at the train station to take them home. On the ride, Mycroft wonders why he's paying their mother for horses and a stable boy if they don't actually have them. Something is afoot.
Something is afoot indeed. When they arrive at the family estate, the brothers are surprised to see it is in a shambles. Mycroft is even more puzzled now because, in addition to the stable boy, he's been paying for gardeners and a full staff, and for upgrades like a washroom and water closet, and for tutors and various instructors for Enola. No. Nope. They have exactly none of those things. They never have. While investigating the house, Enola finds an odd arrangement of sweet peas and thistles that she pours out. The brothers tell Enola the truth about why they haven't been around.
Well, it's because she's a scandal baby!
Their mother was upset after Mycroft, who was the legal owner of the estate after their father's passing, said she could stay there, even though, legally, she had no right to. For the love of fuck, Mycroft. That was awful. No wonder she hates you. Oh, you can stay here, even though legally. Legally, it's mine.
You see everything? Everything here?
Mine.
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 Or mine. Including their unmentionables. Let's not mention that, though.
Pearl clutch!
Oh! So Sherlock deduces that after their father died and they had their falling out with their mother, in which she told them to leave and never come back, she kept the money that they sent for rent and upkeep for herself, and now has absconded. But why would she wait until now? So many years later, and on Enola's birthday. It's kind of shitty. I'm not gonna lie.
Where's the birthday cake?
There's no call in the caterpillar at this time. Sorry.
So... we, like Enola, are upset. I mean, very, very different things, though. She grabs her drawing kit and runs out to the grounds to her favourite hidey spot, where she doodles caricatures of her brothers and writes a list of questions about her missing mother. Sherlock finds her and they discuss her questions, and then he tells her he's leaving for London, but that Mycroft will be staying for a few days to get things settled. Back at the house, Enola decides she needs to go to her mother's room to get a dress to wear, but finds the door locked. Mr. Lane says Mycroft ordered it locked, then she embarrasses him by pulling out the bustle. Not from under her skirts, caveat to that. And saying
separate bustle. It's a separate bustle. Separate she bustle. Doesn't wear a bustle.
No, she's 14. She doesn't need a bustle about. And saying she needs to put it the bustle away. When he lets her in, she finds her mother's key, which she left, really meaning that, you know, she had no intention of returning home.
No.
And she grabs a dress. At dinner, Mycroft pulls the same legally you have to do everything I say mansplaining. My God, he's a giant douche. Messness thing. And tells Enola he's hired a London seamstress to fit her for dresses so she'll be properly attired for boarding school.
Oh!
Oh, scandalous!
Everything's scandalous. Wait, boarding school's not scandalous.
It really is, going by what she's describing it as. My goodness. Yeah, her mother didn't believe in finishing school. I mean, you know, Enola Holmes is not fit for any finishing school that's not airborne. And, you know, her mum, she was a feminist suffragette, so, yeah. But we all know how Mycroft thinks. We all know how Mycroft thinks. So Enola storms off to bed. Not elegantly, mind you, because she trips on her borrowed dress. You know when you just want to make that elegant departure from a room?
The perfect storm off. Nope.
No. I mean, to be fair, she could have fallen on her face.
I probably would have. Enola can't sleep. She's too upset. She angrily doodles her mother, thinking about why she rebelled but didn't take her daughter with her. And why, oh why, did she leave on her birthday? She never did anything without reason. Oh, she left presents for Enola on her birthday. A book. of the secret messages of flowers and a book of ciphers. Of course, her mother has left her a secret message. Genius. Genius! The first cipher told her to look in her chrysanthemums. Hmm. Her mother painted lots of flowers, so she should go and look at the paintings in her room. She looked up the meanings of those flowers and the sweet peas and thistles and learned that her mother had familial affection or attachment and a defiant departure. Well, that's about right.
Accurate.
Precisely right. Yes.
See no lie.
Enola sneaks into her mother's rooms, past Mycroft snoring in the guest room, and finds money hidden in the frame of the chrysanthemums. Ho, ho, ho! Money!
Embezzlement!
So 5 weeks have now passed, and Enola has completed most of her mother's ciphers and found lots of hidden money. She's like Scrooge McDuck with paper money at the moment.
She's swimming in it.
So in that time, the dressmaker came and made several dresses to prepare for her boarding school and forced her to wear special corsets with built-in bustles and bosom enhancers.
Oh, scandal. Pearls. I need a bosom enhancer.
I don't. Anywho, let's do pencil test to one side. Now she is being carted off for finishing school. As the trip begins, she begs to stop at the chapel to visit her father's grave and uses this time to sneak away, retrieving her bicycle with lots of provisions she had hidden the night before. Inside her petticoats, corset and bustle she was forced to wear, she has hidden away her money and a trunk's worth of clothing and supplies. Like her mother, she was prepared to run away from this life she was forced to lead. Her brothers would expect her to run away from London dressed as a boy. So she decided to run to London dressed as a fully grown woman, a widow. And now she will find her mother.
Enola rides all day and sleeps under trees at night. She is exhausted. But when she awakens, she realizes she is near a town, which means she is near a train station and that she can catch a ride to London. Perfect. As she arrives at the station to buy her ticket, she finds a commotion instead. A newsboy shouts about a kidnapping, and then detectives from Scotland Yard arrive. Passersby are speaking of the kidnapping of a young Viscount, and how his family sent for Sherlock Holmes to help solve the case, but he was called away on family business. Instead of buying a train ticket, Enola buys a newspaper and decides to solve the case in her brother's stead.
Duke's heir of 20 years horrifically missing. The headline reads. The article talks about the kidnapping of the 12-year-old Viscount, but looking at the picture in the paper, Enola thinks he looks much younger. Apparently, his mother has kept him looking like a baby his entire life. Enola heads to the home of the missing heir, and when asked her name, she foolishly forgets the fake name she had decided upon, Ivy Meshel, and declares herself Enola Holmes. God damn it, Enola!
Come on!
Damn!
That is not how you run away from home.
Also, that she is a relation of Sherlock Holmes.
No.
It gets worse. But he asked her to come in his stead to solve the case, so... As she's walking through the ground, she's approached by the hysterical mother of the missing boy. And then they are approached by someone else. Madame, Lella, Sybil de Pavia. Madame Lella is a stout woman with bushy, bright red hair, a face very white with makeup and yellowed gloves. She sounds like a clown.
She does sound like a clown. She does not sound like a beautiful, respectable woman.
No, no. She claims as well to be an astral Predatorian. She uses the spirits to find what is lost.
Ooh.
Enola is taken aback by this. Not by the spiritual bit, that's Codswallop, but by the predatorian bit. That's what Enola is. Or will be the world's most professional, logical, scientific predatorian.
As the mother talks to the charlatan, because Enola's pretty sure she is one, she leaves them to continue her search of the grounds. As she walks, she thinks of her plan for finding her mother. After arriving in London, she'll set up a bank account and then put personal ads in the papers her mother loves to read and wait for her to respond. Seems a decent enough idea. But now, back to the case at hand. She finds exactly what she knew she would. Lord Tewkesbury's secret hideaway. Like hers. He has decided to set up a hideout in a tree. She climbs up to find he has built himself a hidden treehouse, where he has cut off his long golden curls and shredded his childish clothes. Around the walls of the treehouse are pictures of boats. It seems little Lord Tewkesbury wanted to grow up, but his mother wouldn't allow it. So he faked a kidnapping and ran away, no longer wanting to be the Marquess of Basilworth. I don't blame him.
Yeah.
I love how they're describing him as Little Lord Fauntleroy. Oh, she must have been obsessed with Little Lord Fauntleroy, and now she's turned her Little Lord Basilweather into him with his long golden curls.
Yes, I Google imaged that just to get the full effect, and I was like, oh, no.
Not handsome or gentlemanly.
No. It wouldn't be what you would call the overtly masculine side of the spectrum. But, you know.
It's very dandy.
Whatever. Little Lord Akeldama.
No, he would like that.
He would. And so would we.
Yes, we would.
Enola gets down from the tree, thinking how alike she and this little lord are. What with their running away and all. She thinks about taking a lock of his hair to his mother and telling her he's run away. But then she decides not to and plans to get back on with her own adventure. Before she can leave the grounds, she is approached by a small detective, Lestrade, who talks to her about how she's acquainted with Sherlock. Instead of telling him any details about herself, she gives him the lock of hair and tells him about little Lord Tewkesbury's desire to grow up and work on a ship, and that he's probably headed towards the docks. She leaves then and catches her train to London.
On her very first train ride, the widow Enola... Oh, the widow.
Pass me my fainting couch.
Oh.
My smelling salts.
She thinks about how she's going to have to change up all her plans since she accidentally revealed her real name at the Basilweather estate.
Amateur.
She's working out a new plan when she is startled by a creepy face in the window of her compartment. But no one else seems bothered by it, so it must be a usual occurrence. A squat, nosy old woman in her carriage talks to her then about her morning garb and how she can make a bit of money by selling her petticoats at the second-hand clothing shop. Oh, ducky. Sell your petticoats, ducky. I loved it. So this is perfect. She can get herself some different clothes there and continue evading her brothers. The shop is not in the best part of town, however. So Enola gets into some trouble on her way. Oh, ducky. Sell me your petticoats. Just show them off a little bit and sell them to me.
I'm done. I know you're not.
I'm done for now.
Mm-hmm. On her way to the shop, she laments at all the poor in the street. But then she realises she stood staring at them for far too long, and then she's grabbed from behind by a man with a knife.
Oh, no.
Welcome to the East End, love. Is this the same man from the train? Can't tell, as she can only see his tawny gloves. The burly stranger demands she tell him where Lord Tewkesbury is. What? She has no idea. She screams for help and manages to get away after the cutthroat tries to slice her throat and stab her side, but is foiled by the whalebone in her corset. She throws her carpet bag in his face and takes off towards a squeaky voice beckoning for her. The squeaky voice is just as bad as the burly man, though, because as soon as she's with him, he twists her arm back and knocks her out.
Son of a bitch. Enola comes too on a boat, and she's not alone. also in the hull of the boat, is Viscount Tewkesbury, Marquess of Basilweather. He's looking a little worse than his dandified photo in the newspaper. His clothes are dirty and ill-fitting, and he has no shoes. They're both tied up, and Tukey informs Enola that the two culprits went through her pockets, taking a few shillings, some licorice, a frilly booklet, and a few other things. Oh no, that was her mother's cipher book! Luckily, they didn't scrounge around in her corset, though, so all her luggage and money are still with her. The kidnappers took the Viscount only an hour or so ago. It seems they split up to grab both him and Enola. But what do they want with her?
That's an excellent question. The ruffians came down to the hole then, talking about precisely that. Oh, that's fortuitous, isn't it?
No!
She said she was related to Sherlock Holmes, so she's got to be worth something. But when did she say that? One of the men, the cutthroat from earlier, told the squeaky-voiced man to watch her captors while he goes to sleep. But Squeaky falls asleep too. Enola pretends to sleep, but actually manages to free her bound hands by rocking herself against the exposed steel ribbing from her corset. Squeaky wakes up because of the rocking, but Tewkesbury starts rocking then to distract Squeaky so Enola can free herself. He's getting kicked by their captor until Enola, hands free now, bonks him on the head with a huge rock. Wonderful. She frees the Viscount too, and together they escape at the hatch.
Outside, as they're about to leave the boat, the burly cutthroat sees them escaping, but luckily, he's in his long johns and chooses to dress rather than chase them. So they get a tiny head start. He soon catches up, though. And Squeaky is with him now. They run through the shabby streets past vendors peddling used wares, and then Enola sees a familiar face! The nosy woman from the train!
Yay!
She fishes some money from her bust enhancer and gives it to the woman, who, despite knowing that Cutter and Squeaky will be furious, ushers them inside. They rest overnight, making sure not to speak so as not to be overheard by the nosy woman, the shop owner, Mrs. Culhane. She gets them some different clothes and shoes and everything they need to conceal themselves from Cutter and Squeaky, and they leave the next day. Another banknote lighter.
Oh, ducky! No duckies for you this time, love.
Got expenses, you know.
Oh, give me all your money.
I'm about to buy some people's silence. Now I want your money.
Oh.
It's not cheap, you know.
Oh.
Ducky.
So they leave that rough neighbourhood and finally feel like they can relax a little. Enola turns to Tukey, who asks not to be called that, so she asks what he prefers instead. What his new chosen name is, but he says it doesn't matter anymore. Then they hear a newsboy shouting about the day's headline. There's been a ransom demand for the Viscount. What? The article mentions that Inspector Lestrade found his hideout and knew that he'd been headed for the docks. Hang on. But that the family received a ransom letter and that Madame l'Irascible du Barbois, the astral predatorian, suggests that they pay the ransom even though there's no evidence the kidnapper or kidnappers have the boy.
This is all very puzzling.
Very. If only we had the Book of Ciphers. Enola spends some time thinking and makes a list of questions she has about Cutter. Then she thinks about Madame l'Irascible du Barbois before she can connect the dots. Tewkesbury says he has to go home. London wasn't what he thought it would be. The people in the slums were so sad. There was so much more happening that he just wasn't ready for. They decide they should go to the police. To Scotland Yard!
On the cab ride to Scotland Yard, Enola pieces together that Madame Leila must have told Cutter about Enola's discoveries at the Basilweather estate, and that they were working together. She doodles them and realizes they are the same person! At Scotland Yard, as they wait to see the inspector, who should walk in but her brother, Sherlock Holmes? He's talking with Lestrade about them stopping the search for his mother, but continuing to search for his sister. She's 14 and an innocent, neglected, uneducated, unsophisticated girl. Lestrade argues that she seemed intelligent enough when he spoke to her, but dear old Sherlock continues to be dismissive of his sister, even though she's literally sitting feet away from him right this very moment, right under his nose. The conversation moved to Tewkesbury, who stands up and announces himself. At the same time, Enola sneaks out a window as if it's the most normal and proper thing to do.
Really is for her, to be fair. I mean,
it really is.
So as much as she wanted to spend more time with her brother and not to abandon Tewkesbury, she had to go find her mother. Especially now, since Sherlock Holmes told Lestrade to give up looking for her. She just wanted to know she was okay, to maybe have tea with her every now and then, and to know she had a mom. So, where is she? Probably someplace where she didn't have to get laced up in corsets and boots and bustles. And all the pens the personal ads she's been planning to write. And of course, they are ciphers using the language of flowers. She thinks a lot about how much she had changed in the 6 weeks or so have passed since her mother ran away. How she's not the insignificant and irrational girl Sherlock thinks her to be. She could go places and accomplish things Sherlock Holmes could never understand or imagine, much less do. And that's exactly what she did.
At the end of the book, a stranger dressed as a nun takes food, clothes, and blankets to the street folk in the slums. In a better part of town, Dr. Leslie T. Rangiston, scientific purgatorian, is setting up offices in the same building as the failed and now arrested astral purgatorium Madame Leila Sybil de Papavere once held her or his seances. No one has ever seen Dr. Leslie, but they have seen his secretary, Ivy Meshel. She's a young professional who carries a clipping of a personal ad with her at all times. One that she has deciphered to learn that the person she was looking for is blooming in the sun, living a carefree life. But why, if she's now free, did she not take her daughter with her? Perhaps one day, Ivy Meshel, Enola Holmes, will find her. I much prefer the movie version of the disappearing mother.
It's a mother with purpose. Like, yeah. Leaving with purpose.
Yes. But anyway, we're talking about the book.
Well, shall we have a slight break before we start talking
about
the book? I think
we should. I think we should. I think we really should have a slight break.
Let's all go for tea and crumpets. We shall meet back in a moment.
Momentarily. We'll meet back in a moment, Ducky.
Please remember that Fictional Hangover is a free podcast and always will be. If you'd like to support the show, stop listening to us for just a few minutes. Become a patron of ours on Patreon at patreon.com/fictionalhangover, then come back. If you can't do this monthly but still want to support us because you just like the show so much, head over to Ko-fi at ko-fi.com/fictionalhangover to drop us a one-time tip. Your support on Patreon and Ko-fi will help us bring you more spoiler-filled discussions, book character cosplays, and ridiculous content you know and love. Now, back to the episode. Are we back from break?
Depends when you edit us back, really. The mystical, magical, godlike powers of the editor.
That's right. It all is in my hands. I think we're back. I think we're back from break now.
And we're back!
Can I say that Mycroft is a dick?
You can say it three times. It may call him into mansplaining, though.
No, I don't want to summon him. But man, he was a dick.
Completely.
It was frustrating.
And the way Sherlock was she is just a girl with little brain.
She's clearly uneducated. She's ignorant. It was terrible.
Can she even read?
Does she know how to dress herself?
Has she bathed? Can she chew her own food?
Does she speak the Queen's English? Does she sleep out in the stables?
She does. She sleeps out in the stables. Because there's no one else out there. There's no one in the stables. There's no horses. Roomy. There's no stable boy.
It's room to swing a cat. If they had a cat.
Yeah.
Mycroft's paying for the cat. They just don't have a cat.
Don't swing a cat. That's not nice. They don't like that.
Not literally, then.
Don't do that.
No.
Don't do that.
Do we have to do a PSA about swinging cats? Don't do it.
Don't swing cats. Don't swing
cats. Stay in school. Don't do drugs.
Don't swing cats. So yeah, that was that was a big standout moment for me, is just how dismissive her brothers were. They were terrible.
They seemed overly dismissive for that time period as well. Like, it is hugely misogynistic. I get that. But they seem to be, they always think they've got the superior intellect. They're always the players in the game, mm-hmm. and the ones to outwit, that they can't conceive that anybody, let alone a female, can have the cognitive capacity to match them, never mind outwit them.
Yeah. But they got outwitted, my friends.
A lot. I didn't like the way they kept saying to Enola, it's your mother.
Yeah. She's their mom too.
Yeah. And you kind of think, hang on, if she's raised you two, why would she have done anything any different with Enola?
Well, maybe the father was more involved in their upbringing.
Possibly. Potentially.
And then he died and then they left.
Yeah.
Allowing them to stay by their own good graces in the house that is legally Mycroft's.
Bloody entails.
Legally. It is legally mine. It's legally my money. Legally my house. Shut up, Mycroft. Come on.
It's because he's not sitting in the Diogenes Club trying to pretend to rule the world. I did quite like the interplay between Mycroft and Sherlock, though. Like, Mycroft is blustery, paunchy fellow, and Sherlock's like, dude, you're an idiot.
Yeah.
Like, even Sherlock thought Mycroft was a fool.
Yes, he did. What was he thinking? Trying to step in and immediately send Enola off to finishing school? And yeah, that's not going to work out. It's not going to work out.
No.
And then later when Sherlock was telling him, you know, hey, yeah, that's not going to work. Of course it's not going to work. What did he say? It was like leading a horse or something. Don't compare your sister to a horse. That's stupid. It's hateful and terrible. Stop being so hateful and terrible. It's frustrating.
It really is.
I did enjoy this story, though.
Yeah, I was a little worried when you messaged me and said the audiobook's 4 hours long. And I thought you meant 4 hours at the speed we typically listen to. So me being the trustworthy person that I am, the trusting person I am, went and checked and went, no, 4 hours in absolute total. That's not even like at hour speed. Whoa.
Yeah. It's a tiny, sweet, adorable book.
Yeah.
And there's 4 more in the series?
Something like that. It's nice. It's nice and bite-sized. It's one of those, if you're reading quite a heavy series of books, but you need something, you've read 2, you're like, I need a break. You could read this, you could crack it through in a night, and then pick up again, and you've had that little mental break to be able to recalibrate.
Yeah.
It was good.
There's a very adorable graphic novel that was also based on this story. It's cute. It's an adorably drawn 60 some odd pages graphic novel of this story, and it's adorable.
I like the graphic novel translations of books.
Yeah, me too.
It's nice seeing the characters imagined, usually slightly differently.
Yeah. I like seeing imagined characters in real life.
Like cosplay, perhaps. Ducky.
Ducky. Oh, dear.
Yeah, I do. That's really why I do it. I like to see it. And, you know, that doesn't happen very often with book characters unless they've been turned into movies.
No.
Not many people just decide to dress up as a book character. But I do.
Depends which book signing you're going to. Or depends which convention you're going to.
What? Can't go to conventions anymore.
What's a convention? What's the outside?
I don't know.
It's a dark, terrible, and scary place. Literally. Anywho, can I just point out I absolutely love the way the Marquis is described as little Lord Fauntleroy, and he's bemoaning his picture in the paper, and he's like, oh no, my picture, oh no.
Oh, I did love the headlines.
Yes, yes. I liked it when she was in the tea room and she went, he's only 12. And she thought he was like 8 or something. That was hilarious. Can I say the one thing that bugged me?
Sure.
In the audiobook.
Sure.
Now, I love the audiobook narrator. Catherine Kellgren is very, 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 very good.
Mm-hmm. Are you upset that she didn't shout, Duke's heir of tender years, horrifically missing? Is that what you're upset about?
I can forgive that. What I can't forgive is the way she pronounced Inspector Lestrade's name. It's not Inspector Lestrade, it's Lestrade. I have never, ever heard it pronounced any other way.
Hmm.
And it just bugged me. Might just be me.
Might just be you. I don't recall that.
All I remember is I was in the kitchen, doing things in the kitchen, and I was walking around. I literally went, when she said it. It was like a physical reaction. And I went, oh no, I do not like. And I rewound it. Oh, she said it wrong. Oh no, no, I can't. What has been heard cannot be unheard. And it's like the only problem I've got with the audiobook narration.
I don't know that I've heard that name in a way that would cause me to cringe.
Literally just one time. This audiobook, I didn't like the way it was pronounced.
Is that a character or a name or something that I should know?
Inspector Lestrade?
Yeah.
Yeah, he's the inspector who Sherlock always has contact with at Scotland Yard.
I haven't read any Sherlock.
I've never read any Sherlock, but he's in all of the movies.
It's been a while since I've watched a Sherlock movie.
He is in them all. He is a big known Sherlock character. Where there is Sherlock, there is Dr. Watson, and where the two of them, and they inevitably have the police. He's basically our police liaison.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I haven't watched a Sherlock movie in many, many years.
Yeah. So. Other than that, the audiobook narration was a stellar job again.
Do you know what I liked about the audiobook narration?
Decay!
No!
I quite enjoyed it. Decay!
Decay!
Yeah, so that made her my favorite character.
Yeah.
Just because of the narration.
Yeah, I've got to say it the same. Like, everybody, Enola was mint.
Right.
You know, really good character.
Yeah, she was great.
Mycroft was a dick. Sherlock was a dick. Yeah. Really. The Marquis was, he was a minor little dandy character.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. Mrs. Coulthard. Ducky! Was Ducky! The most out. I don't know. Madame Le La Cible de Pouvoir.
Yeah.
Was reasonable.
Yes.
But, yeah, I don't think any of the characters particularly stood out to me, apart from one in the book. If we're talking about the movie, different kettle of fish.
Yes. Entirely different kettle of fish.
Yes.
The movie was really delightful.
Any surprises?
I guess just probably that Sherlock was such a dismissive dick. And, like, I assume that he's, you know, like we've said 100 times... not read any Sherlock, and I assume, you know, that he's probably not, like, the nicest fellow, but still.
He's just emotionally removed. He's just distance.
Yeah, he doesn't have an emotion. He has 75% of one emotion.
Yeah. So I thought, from what I know of Sherlock, I thought it was well translated.
Yeah, so, I don't know.
Yeah, yeah.
I wasn't really surprised by anything. It's a middle grade mystery.
Yeah. I mean,
It's just a cute story.
It's just a cute story. My surprise is probably that her mother basically left her to go and have a life.
Yeah.
We assume it's left saying that. We assume. And it's very different from the movie. And I was I was probably more surprised that that was the biggest difference. That's so big. It's the biggest difference from the movie.
Yeah, well, at least in the book, they did mention that their mother is a feminist suffragette. So that leads very well into the movie with her, you know, struggling for women's voting rights and exploding things.
And it could be, without having read any of the other books, it could be that it turns into that.
Right, that could happen later on. We don't know.
Exactly. And you've established it within the first one. I get that. And I do hope they make more movies. Do we want to talk about the movie a little bit? I know we're going to watch it.
Yeah, we are going to watch it. Yes, I would like to talk about the movie a little bit. I think it was nice.
What was the biggest surprise in terms of changed from the book to the movie? Or
I mean, probably just really the entire plot of installing Lord Tewkesbury so he could be the deciding vote. That was kind of a big deal, and that his entire family either was murdered or wanted to murder him to control the vote. That's all it was about. It was about voting. And voting is very important. Everyone vote every chance you get.
Yeah, but it wasn't just like a random vote. It was basically like ensuring that poor people aren't being mistreated as much. Like, it's giving them more, not necessarily rights, but at least assistance and help.
Yes, it was a very important vote.
Yeah, so Tewkesbury was older. Alona was older. But I think in the movie,
just a couple years.
Yeah,
older.
Just 16 rather than 14, because it's a little bit weird for a 14-year-old to in these days to run off to London and, you know, be able to.
Yeah, pay but for 16 is houses. Reasonable.
16 is fine, ish. But yeah, it seemed like half the book, the first half of the book was pretty faithful, and the first half of the book was pretty well translated to the movie.
Mm-hmm.
And then the second half, no. Like, she never gets to the boarding school.
No, yeah, that was interesting. Her being in the boarding school for a couple of days. How long was she there? Not very long.
Not very long.
Tewkesbury broke her out.
In a chest. The laundry adorable. Chest. Yeah. And his family being a great big bag of dicks.
Yes. Although it seems that his mother and his uncle were not terrible people.
No.
And you were kind of like getting that idea the whole time that they're, you know, well, not his mother because she was hysterical the whole time, but you were kind of getting the idea that they were all kind of in on it.
Do you know what, though? I'm prejudiced against
the wealthy dowager.
Sir Wimbrell, something like that. I'm prejudiced against him because he plays Mr. Collins in the Colin Firth BBC adaptation of Pride and Prejudice. So I'm automatically prejudiced against... Sorry, he's a fantastic actor, but I am.
Yeah.
But like, Francis de la Tour being the dowager and being the instigator of all of the badness against her grandson. Yes.
Yeah, it was fantastic when she shot him with the shotgun. Spoiler! Oh, but it was so great.
It was. I really did enjoy it. I like the breaking the fourth wall like storytelling.
Yes.
I enjoy that.
Yeah, that was cute.
And it had a really good pace. It was really fast pace. Really well done.
I was upset at first watching it that her going to the estate as the widow didn't happen. But then it did happen, just at a different time.
Yeah, because she goes to London, does some stuff in London, and then decides to go to the Tewkesbury estate and try and solve the kidnapping at that point.
Yeah.
And he's selling flowers in Covent Garden.
Yes, instead of wanting to run away and work on a ship, he wants to sell flowers.
And how absolute kick-ass is Enola in the movie? She beats the stuffing out of people.
Yeah, well, she knows jiu-jitsu. She learned it above the tea room.
She learned it.
She learned it personally by her mother.
From her mother. Her mother learned it from the jiu-jitsu.
Above the tea room.
And I absolutely love that.
That was really cute, though, that they were doing jiu-jitsu above the tea shop.
I adore the actress, Susan Wacoma. I think that's how I pronounce her surname. I'm sorry if it's wrong. I adore her. She was in, I don't know if it made it over to America, but she was in a show called Crazy Head. Think Supernatural, but with two London girls.
Oh, okay. I could watch that.
And it's really watchable. It's really, really watchable. And honestly, it's a really good show. So I highly recommend that. She's also in Truth Seekers on Amazon at the moment.
I love Truth Seekers. Is that her?
That's her.
Oh my gosh.
That's her. I'm only halfway through Truth Seekers. I am really rating the programme, but she's in that as well. And there's this whole thing on the internet now where they're like, they want her character from Enola Holmes, they want Edith to have a spin-off series.
Oh, and yeah, I would watch would that.
Adore that. She's such a good actress.
I did not realise that she was in Truth Seekers. Everyone should go and watch Truth Seekers because it's fantastic.
Yes. And if you can watch Crazy Heads, it's brilliant. It's really well done. It's only like a short, I think, I want to say it's only like a 4-episode thing. It's really short, but it's a really good, satisfying demons miniseries. It's funny.
Speaking of her, I liked in the movie when Sherlock stops by the tea house and she goes back and she's, you know, making their cups of tea. And he's like, can you put the teapot down? You are dangerous with a teapot. So she slams the teapot down. It's very good. She could have killed him with that teapot if she wanted to.
She seemed a lot older in Enola Holmes than what, you know, I don't know if it's the way she's carrying herself. She's very young. She is. She's very young. But I don't know if it's the way she was holding it, like carrying her posture and the way she was dressed, but she seemed older.
Matronly.
Yeah.
Nope. She's a jujitsu badass.
She is a jujitsu badass. And it was really, really
good.
With
a teapot.
Yes.
Yeah. Is there anything else in the movie that you liked? I like Sam Claflin, even though, my God, he played Mycroft so well, I just wanted to stab him.
Sam Claflin was amazing. I adore Henry Cavill with and without his top on. Can we just have a moment?
Yep. Ducky!
Ducky! The worst thing is, a certain character wasn't in.
Who wasn't?
Mrs. Culphane. She wasn't really in. Not enough for me.
She was there. Do you know who wasn't there? Was Madame Layla Sybil de Papaville.
Because that entire storyline was cut.
Yeah, that was not a part of it. He was just being murdered instead. Constantly being murdered instead of being kidnapped.
One extreme to another. But no, it was good. It was good. It was good. And I am looking forward to watching it with you. And whoever decides to turn up for our fictional Hangover Theatre 3000 showing of Enola Holmes on Netflix.
Yes, me too.
We will set up an event. Please, please come. And
join us and follow the instructions in the event.
Yes, you need the extension. It's free. It's Google Chrome extension. That's free.
But you must use Google Chrome.
And you must have a Netflix account.
Yes, and you have to watch Netflix on your computer.
Yes. I mean, you could join in just the Zoom and not know what the hell's going on, but still
you could
have a natter.
But there's also a chat and teleparty, so
yeah,
you can chat there.
Yeah.
Anyway, is it time?
It's time, it's time,
it's time. It's time for Would You Rather.
Oh, Ducky, it's Would You Rather.
Yes. Oh, indeed.
Oh, yes.
So this was our first question.
Well, this week, Ducky, we asked, would you rather be a finder of lost things or a decipherer of the ciphers?
Would you rather be a finder of lost things or a decipherer of ciphers?
Decipherer.
Decipherer of cipherers. Whatever.
Get your R's in there, General American.
General American does
General
not
American. Decipherer of deciphers.
He's too busy smelling like a foisty umbrella.
This wispy mustache.
Anywho, please vote in future Would You Rathers by going to the Would You Rather group. Join it. Vote. Comment. Anywho, would you rather be a finder of lost things or a decipherer of ciphers? On Facebook, 69% would like to be a finder. 31% decipherer. On Instagram, 48% a finder. and 52% decipherer. And on Twitter, it was an even 50-50 split.
Oh, good. Twitter's back to normal.
Yay!
Yay, Twitter.
I know, it had a few weeks where it was all glitchy and, you know, that odd vote.
Yeah,
but back
to
even numbers, it's fine.
Yeah, yeah.
Did you know you can vote on any and all of them as well?
You can. And you can vote for different things on different sites. I haven't done that. Did we get any good comments?
We had a few. At Rhonda with a book on Instagram said, decipherer all the way.
At Lord Sock on Twitter said, finder of lost things. I just think it'll be neat.
That's so cute.
It is cute.
Tonya on Facebook and from our book club meeting, I prefer riddles.
Coral on Facebook and our newest Patreon patron said, I feel like both could be pretty satisfying, but finding something that's lost wins for me.
Colin on Facebook and currently the sofa says, finder for me, as I'm already awesome at finding stuff, so it's not going to be too much of a stretch. Unless it was me who lost the something in the first place, in which case the thing would be so thoroughly lost that none of the Holmes siblings will be able to find it. Or his wife.
Constance on Facebook, and currently our sole bonus tier member on Patreon, said, I know Hufflepuff. We Slytherins are much more clever to crack some codes. Yeah, we are. Yeah, we are.
Can you please
in which I
the
replied
as well?
With Voldemort dancing with a snake on his shoulders.
Yeah, thank you. Maya on Facebook says, my greatest strength is finding things.
What are you? Are you a finder or a decipherer?
As cool as it would be to be a decipherer, I will be a finderer. I think it's just
not
a more
me.
Overall useful talent, but then I can branch out and make money from that. Open a detective agency.
Okay.
Ducky detectives!
Ducky! I would rather be a decipherer. I enjoy a puzzle. Especially letter puzzles. I can see the answers just at a scramble of letters. Can just see it.
Yeah. Word searches aren't a taxing thing. Like, they just leap out.
Yeah.
I think that's probably why I would go for a finder. Like, I can't do Picross. Struggle with those.
I really just like any sort of puzzle. Yeah. So I'm going to go with decipherer. Although, I mean, you like you said, being a finder would be probably more lucrative.
We could go into business together. I'll be the finder and you be the decipherer.
Okay. Okay.
We can have big oak desks that face each other and we'll probably just toss paper at each other to be fair.
Probably we will. Yeah. That's right.
But we'll have cool posters.
Yeah. All right.
Imagine if you were a detective. If you were a detective like Enola Holmes, mm-hmm. and imagine how many costumes you would have.
So many.
So many.
That would be the best part of being a detective, I think, is going undercover. Yeah. Wearing lots of disguises. Oh, that reminds me. Something that I read in all of those interviews and articles that I read earlier is that the one thing that Nancy Springer didn't like about the movie is that Enola always dressed up as a boy.
She didn't always.
She was a boy almost every time. She bought people's clothes. I'll pay you £5 to trade clothes with me.
I like that bit, actually. Yeah, but that's because she's a girl. She's got to change herself drastically. The easiest way to do that is be a boy. I get that. I get what she's saying. But I don't think she spent as much time there as, you know.
That was the exact opposite of her plan in the book, which is probably what she's referring to, because she said, oh, my brothers will expect me to dress up as a boy and run far away from London. So instead, I will dress up as a lady and run straight to London. That's probably what she's referring to.
Yeah. Okay. Next question.
Would you rather dress as a widow or a nun?
I have already dressed as a nun. That was my costume at my hen party. I mean, the skirt was a bit shorter than a nun probably would wear. And nuns probably shouldn't learn how to be strippers.
Probably not.
Well, pole dancers.
Probably not.
There's lots
pole
of pictures.
Pole dancing for the Lord.
There's lots of pictures. I can't go forwards on a pole. I can go backwards.
That is an excellent piece of information that you have shared with the world.
The pictures are on Facebook.
I myself have not ever danced a pole.
Have you not?
No.
It's good exercise. Bloody difficult.
I bet.
Don't wear fishnets. You need to wear whale nets because you need the skin contact in order to create the friction. Poles are waxed, great, but you need the skin to be on there to help grip. The lady who was teaching us, who I'm still friends with on Facebook, actually, she was doing phenomenal things. At one point, she got all the way up to the top of the pole, wrapped her legs round, let go, fell backwards, and then put her arms out. And it was called the angel or something like that. Wow. Fun fact, apparently, if you are a pole dancer, you will just mainly stand around the pole and only do one big trick, which is the moneymaker trick, because it's just, it's too tiring otherwise. You save that for when you take the gentleman into the other room.
What a splendid amount of information we have just discovered.
Thank you. Questioned anybody in that profession apart from the person who taught me how to do it as my hen night thing. And that was several years ago.
If you are a stripper or a pole dancer and you would like to educate Claire, send us an email. Contact us on social media. Please tell Claire everything she needs to know about dancing on poles.
I know it's difficult.
Is your answer to the question that you address as a widow or a nun? I'm not sure where that story went. I'm not sure where that story took us.
That's because I said I'd already dressed as a nun, so I'm not going to get dressed as a nun again.
I didn't know.
No, hold on. Actually, I'm reassessing this, because a widow would be quite fun. You get if we're in the times of Jack the Ripper and the Holmeses.
Mm-hmm. And we are.
Yeah. The widow could be quite fun, because you can get away with lots of things. And you can go to places where a nun probably shouldn't be going. But then I think,
like the strip club.
But then I'm thinking, you remember Blues Brothers when Carrie Fisher's character gets dressed up as a nun?
Mm-hmm.
As well.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not realistic either. I'm going to go with widow. Wear the widow's weaves. Full, theatrical, dramatic. I want the veil. I want corsets. I want layers and layers and layers of black lace. I want it all. Yeah. Give it to me.
Yeah. I want to be the widow just for the hysteria.
Yes.
Because you have to be very, like, reserved as a nun.
Can I have a fainting couch and smelling salts with my attire, please?
Yeah.
Thank you.
Of course you can. So I'm going with a widow.
Mint.
We'll both be widows.
And I'll just walk around graveyards as well and just be, ah! I'll be a wailing widow. Or a black widow.
Yeah, I need a wail.
You could do it. You're going to do it right.
Yeah.
Cool. Anywho. Yeah. Would you rather wear a bustle or a bust enhancer?
Okay, well, we've already had this conversation today in the podcast. I would prefer the bosom enhancer, as I have no bosom.
I think I have natural versions of both.
Okay, so you take none and I'll take both.
Okay.
Okay, sorted. Would you rather hide in Enola's hideout or Tukey's hideout?
Enola's.
Less so you don't boats. Have to climb the tree?
Well, it's not necessarily climbing a tree. It's less boats. I'm really not bothered. And he left his hair there? No. Come on, tidy up after yourself.
Yeah.
I think Enola's would just be more interesting. Tukey doesn't really strike me as a man boy who can think of multiple things at the same time.
What if it was movie Tukey's hideout with flowers?
Oh, he had a good one in the movie, didn't he? It was like a full-on treehouse thing. Yeah. If it was movie version, probably Tukey's in the movie and Enola's in the book.
Yeah. I like the idea of hiding in Enola's hideout. Like, under the branches of the trees. I don't know. I feel like it would be pretty. And I don't fancy heights. So.
No, I mean, to be fair, though, Chucky's in the movie wasn't very high.
Yeah, but in the book, it was pretty high up in the tree. Yeah. In the four trees grown together.
Yeah.
And I feel like it was pretty elaborate in the book as well.
Yeah. Well, especially with all the bits and pieces. I vaguely remember as a child, like, one of the many, many hideout places, like, me and my friends or my cousins or whoever would go to was very similar to Enola's.
Hmm.
So, it doesn't exist anymore. Trees get pulled down or struck by lightning. So, yeah, definitely. In the books, definitely Enola's, to answer this question.
Yeah, I agree. I agree with that.
Would you rather be Cutter or Madame Layla Sybil de Papava, or however you pronounce it?
Obviously, Madame Layla.
Oh.
Obviously. For the dramatics, for the hysteria.
I would be.
For the costumes, all of it.
So over the top.
Yeah.
It would be ridiculous. I mean, the accent, the bad accents would come out.
Yeah.
The dramatic swishings.
Yeah, you might swish your wig off.
I have been there. I have done that. I have played this type of character for Murder Mystery Nights, and I loved
it. The Astral Purgatorian?
Well, not specific, but I've certainly been, you know, the speaker with the dead. Mm-hmm. Oh, yes.
You've led seances in IKEA?
Not an IKEA. IKEA's a dangerous place to have seances because something is likely to come through the portal that you open. But certainly at my friend's house. Over Chinese.
Everyone, go back and check out our horror store episode.
Oh, God,
to
yes.
Hear about the seance in the IKEA. You will not regret it.
And then do not do that.
Definitely do not do that. Definitely.
Go to IKEA for meatballs, but do not go for the seance.
Not for the seance. Yeah. IKEA, if you'd like to send us a check, or perhaps sponsor the show.
That would be mint. If IKEA really sponsors the show, I'll hold the seance in IKEA.
Okay, me too. I'll be there.
Cool. Mint.
Done.
Excellent.
Okay. Favorite final thought quote?
Okay. I've actually got two.
I only have one today.
There's nothing serious that comes out of them all. The first one is simply because I kind of liked it. From the audio just kind of made me giggle. So the great Sherlock Holmes asking me for my thoughts, but I had none to offer. I was, after all, a girl of minimal cranial capacity.
Man, they treated her like shit.
They really did. But the one that also made me giggle was, horses sweat, you know, and men perspire, whereas ladies glow. And the amount of times people have said men sweat, ladies glow to me is unbelievable.
Well, now men perspire.
Perspire.
Because horses sweat.
Horses sweat, yes. Yourself, what is your thought quote? Ducky!
Ducky! That's mine, just ducky. Your petticoats. Go say your petticoats, ducky.
Mine is... Cycling, I have found, allows one to think without fear of one's facial expressions being observed.
Nice.
I don't know why. I just really enjoyed that as I was listening, and I thought, yep, that's perfect.
I remember that one.
Get on a bike and have some really odd facial expressions, which I do all the time.
Yeah.
And if you join our Patreon page, you can see them.
As long as you pick the bonus level, ducky. I really feel like we need to find the ducky quote, and that needs to be the episode quote when we release it next week.
It really does need to be that.
It has to be.
It really does.
So, my dear, if you like this, you should try...
This. What do you suggest?
I am going to suggest My Lady Jane by Cynthia Hand, Brodie Ashton and Jodie Meadows. And if you go back and listen to episode 80 of this fair podcast, you will hear a very detailed summary and a wonderful discussion about that book, which we absolutely adored. The audiobook narrator is the exact same audiobook narrator from the Enola Holmes book. It's Catherine Kellgren. She is a fantastic audiobook narrator. She, for me, she's up there with Moira Quirk. mm-hmm. in that kind of like, she's distinctly British and she does a very good turn of the Victorian Regency, you know, more upper class accent. She's very, very, very listenable. So go and check that out. And the blurb is taken from bookdepository.com and it is, My Lady Jane, co-authors Cynthia Hand, Bodie Ashton and Jodie Meadows have created a one-of-a-kind YA fantasy in the tradition of The Princess Bride, featuring a reluctant king, an even more reluctant queen, a noble steed, and only a passing resemblance of actual history. Because sometimes history needs a little help. At 16, Lady Jane Grey is about to be married off to a stranger and caught up in a conspiracy to rob her cousin King Edward of his throne. But those trifling problems aren't for Jane to worry about. Jane gets to be Queen of England. Like, that could go wrong.
Oh dear.
Oh dear. And it is a delightful book. It's probably one of the books of the year for me, like, in terms of...
ones that we covered on the show.
Yeah, it's an antidote to misery.
Yeah.
So I highly recommend checking that out. Yourself? If you're not going to go here, I'm going to be very upset. I'm just going to say, I know where you need to go. I have them displayed because...
I'm surprised that you did not go here. But clearly, 100%, the Finishing School series by Gail Carriger.
Enola should be going to Madame Geraldine's Finishing School for Ladies of Quality.
She really should. If she has to go to boarding school, it needs to be Mademoiselle Geraldine's. It has to be. So, we've covered this on the podcast before, but it was a long, long time ago in a world without full summaries of books.
In a world... before Claire.
So we'll have to cover them again eventually sometime.
Yes, please. I need the excuse and the reason to read them. I don't.
You don't.
I do.
You don't need it. You don't
no,
need. An
I think it's more. It's
books.
More for me to be able to say I have to read these.
I have to read them.
Darn,
yes.
Oh, I'm so upset.
Yeah. Oh, it's so terrible. So the summary from Goodreads of the first book in the Finishing School series, Etiquette and Espionage by Gail Carriger, our favorite. It's one thing to learn to curtsy properly. It's quite another to learn to curtsy and throw a knife at the same time. Welcome to Finishing School. 14-year-old Sophronia is a great trial to her poor mother. Sophronia is more interested in dismantling clocks and climbing trees than proper manners, and the family can only hope that company never sees her atrocious curtsy. Mrs. Temenik is desperate for her daughter to become a proper lady, so she enrolls Sophronia in Mademoiselle Geraldine's Finishing Academy for Young Ladies of Quality. But Sophronia soon realizes that the school is not quite what her mother might have hoped. At Mademoiselle Geraldine's, young ladies learn to finish everything. Certainly they learn the fine arts of dance, dress, and etiquette, but they also learn to deal out death, diversion, and espionage. In the politest possible ways, of course. Sophronia and her friends are in for a rousing first year's education.
They are indeed.
Yes, I love that series.
That's it for this episode of Fictional Hangover. I'm Amanda.
I'm Claire.
Join us next time as we discuss Stardust by Neil Gaiman. Look out for our Would You Rather polls on social media. Don't forget about our book club and monthly challenges on Facebook. Be sure to visit our shop on Redbubble at fictionalhangover.redbubble.com for all your favorite Fictional Hangover themed merchandise, and now become a patron of ours on Patreon at patreon.com/fictionalhangover or support us on Ko-fi at ko-fi.com/fictionalhangover. Until next time, remember, the only cure for a fictional hangover is another book.
Ducky!
That's the
Ducky.
Only cure, Ducky!
Ducky!
Sell your petticoats. Them's real silks, them are.
You can find us at fictionalhangover.com. Follow us on Instagram at fictionalhangover. Find us on Facebook at facebook.com/fictionalhangover and on Twitter at fictionalhangover, no ER. If you'd like this episode, check out our others and rate, review and subscribe so you don't miss out. And finally, special thanks to Liz Emerson for our music. You can find her on Facebook and Patreon. Thanks for listening.